LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkContra.com, located in Western North Carolina, and this week we welcome the very wonderful Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com in the Twin Cities of Paganistan back to the show for a discussion on rites of passage. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkContra.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Doc Murphy. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone to the Monday Night Phenomenon that is Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. And that's right, you heard it, folks, it is Monday yet again. What does that mean? It means Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page. Take a few minutes, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychic's Facebook page, and drop a comment on the Magic Mondays post for your chance to win a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. Lots of great readers out there waiting to give you some fantastic insights and advice. Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. All right. So here we are yet again, the Monday Night family coming together. I see the chat's filling up. Hello to everyone. Dr. Sweets, hey Maganda. Our good friend JD's here with us. Phyllis Margaret Gabor and Troll T just jumped on in. So thrilled to have everybody here with us for the return of Doc Murphy to Mystics and Mages. But before we go too far in, let's jump back over to you, Reverend James. How are things going with you?
Well, things are going. Lots of vigil candles lately, particularly in the realm of court case work. So that's kind of interesting and a little unusual for right now, at least for me. And I'm trying to think of what other things are. Well, it's court cases and career career in like business. It's what we're getting a lot of right now. And some of them are coming out pretty good. Some of them, not so much. So it's very useful to get those vigil candles in and get those readings and know what's coming ahead and what you can do about it. And having those candles lit to, you know, help push those things in the right direction. You can get them here at bulkfaithministries.com. You can get them at Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, Four Altars, a lot of us, well, not a lot of us, honestly, a handful of us at AIR have our own candle ministries. A lot of us at AIR do burn candles for clients, but, you know, go check some of those out and see if you can find some that help push your goals along. Other than that, still cleaning stuff up from that big tree we had. Still got limbs and stuff, but now that we've cleared off our patio, we've got a nice little place to start burning some of the little bits and bobs in a little nice little fire area. So since it's summertime, we can start enjoying the outside. And I've also just started officially learning the Tibetan language. So that's interesting. I'm taking classes on iTalki, if you've never heard of that and you're interested in learning about, you know, new languages and things, you can check out italki.com. If you're interested in helping me out with my learning, feel free to ask me about a referral link so that you can help me get a little bit of extra credit toward my learning. it's fun. And there's also a event coming up that the Karma Kagyu Tibetan tradition is holding a class for 2 or 3 months, I think.
2 months.
From July to September, on beginning Tibetan through a monk teaching it for free. So the only thing that they ask you is to attend every class and do your homework. So that would be your samaya or your commitment for that transmission. If you're interested in that, you can check that out at kagyu.org. That's kagya.org. And I'll type that in the chat here shortly. But, yeah, that's what I'm up to.
Never a dull moment, to be honest, in the lives of Reverend James and Reverend Art with Folk Conjure and everything. You know, Reverend James did allude to, you know, a lot of the work and such that's been going on, a lot of protection work that, you know, in protection inquiries have been kind of coming down the channel. We live in such a weird time where you never know, you know, people just feel that it's okay to attack and throw shit at others. And, you know, it, you know, well, in some cases physically, some cases spiritually, but, you know, it's such a wild time and such a wild road. You know, we had mentioned previously, too, that, you know, soon to be coming up on folkconjure.com, we will be putting out some herbal packets, some our line of bath salts, and sachet powders are going to be coming to Folk Conjure too. So it's a little bit more about what we've been working on around here. And since we are in the process of sharing some free classes that are going around, I just shared a link into the chat. It's a very long link. Apologies for that. But there is a free class being held by Mountain Rose Herbs. They call it the Herbalism Project. And on this Friday, June 14th, from 1 to 4 p.m. Pacific, which is 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they are having a cultural herbalism course that, you know, 3-hour course, a few different speakers. Really kind of an interesting topic. And, you know, they're going to be talking about the topics are weaving ties of herbalism around the globe, significance of Great Lakes plants in Anishinaabek culture, and celebrating our ancestors through plants, as well as
Anishinaabeg.
Thank you, Doc Murphy. I knew you would help me on that. And the last one is Sunflower, a Mexican Ray of Healing. So if you're interested, I will be there, already signed up, sent in my registration. So maybe I'll catch you there. Apparently that's a series that they do. So, you know, free information from, you know, Mountain Rose is a pretty good company. So definitely giving them a little bit of a free shout out right now. But check that out if you are so inclined and so interested. Without further ado, I am uber excited to welcome our guest back tonight. The incomparable, amazing, wonderful Doc Murphy is back with us in the studio tonight. I can hear her giggling in the background. How are things with you, Doc Murphy?
Oh, hello, everybody. It's so good to be back. Oh, first off, Paganistan is summertime. It's beautiful. It's my time of year. This is my favorite time of year, is early summer and midsummer. I'm so busy. Oh, my God. between my day gig and camp, you know, my work for camp has launched. I'm collecting oral histories again while my research partner, who you met a few podcasts back, Velvet Capone, is working hard on the archive end of things, and we're busy with that. And I'm going to be heading out next week to the Earth House Pagan Festival, the Earth House Midsummer Gather. This is a gather that's been going on for, about 22 years now. It was sort of it started out as a local attempt, sort of a small kind of family reunion kind of pagan gathering on the founder's private land. They had a farm out in Wisconsin, and started to grow. And, you know, then the things like the neighbors and the zoning things and the camping permits, it's moved to a campground in Wisconsin. And at this campground is where the old pagan spirit gatherings were in the 70s. This is a family that is so accustomed to working with pagans and welcoming of them. I mean, there's been pagan magic being done there for over 40 years. So it's a great spot. And it's going to be a combination of, well, I'll be doing camp work there. I've got some interviews lined up while I'm at the fest. So I'm going to be bringing my wireless mics and my recording gear and everything else. But it's also, I'm traveling there with my best friend. I'm going to see some old friends and new friends. It's where I did a lot of my dissertation research was at the Earth House Festival. So it's a lot of just good memories, but also realizing that my role in the community is changing and kind of looking into, you know, next steps with regard to that. But it's also going to be a hell of a good time. There will be drums. There will be fire. There will be booze. There will be lots of booze. We have some really talented brewers, and there's a contest every year. And somehow I always get roped in to be the judge. I don't know how it happens. I just don't know why. You know, but that's where I'm heading, and to spend a week in Wisconsin with one of the pagan festivals that I attend. So I'm packing for that and trying not to hurt myself. So there's a lot that I'm juggling right now, but it's all good stuff, and things are plugging along in other avenues of life. So I'm doing really well.
Sounds like life is just as busy up there in Paganistan as it is down here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And actually,
it really is.
Just tossed a couple quick links for everybody into the chat. For those who are just joining us for the first time, possibly you have not heard of Camp. Camp is the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism, working to preserve pagan history. We did drop the link for the website, paganarchive.org, and a link to the Facebook page. Definitely want to reach out and drop a like on that Facebook page and follow the developments and such. River James and I have actually had a little bit of, assistance in helping to get camp up and running. Reverend James with his, I just say incomparable technical abilities, what was able to help get the website moving and get the archive going and set up a lot of the technical side of camp in recent weeks. So
we are
so
grateful. Thank you so much for all your hard work, guys. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
You know, and that's one thing as a community, you know, we're all spiritual. We're all, you know, whether we're Wiccan or Druid, wherever you fall on the pagan spectrum, spiritualist spectrum, et cetera, you know, it's really part of this life too. We need to support each other. We need to do what we can to lift each other up and really grow these aspects of our community. So it really is something, you know, I think I can speak for both of us that we're proud to say that, you know, we were able to lend a hand and willing to continue.
And we're thrilled to have you. Like I said, we were jokingly, Velvet and I saying at the beginning of all this, you know, we're both not techie. We both know that we're going to need people that are skilled in tech and social media. And so we're so happy that you're helping us out, and so much more excitement to come. We're going to be uploading interviews and transcripts and all sorts of things by the time this grant period is over with. So, and it's been delightful. It's so delightful to sit with elders in the community, many of whom have told me that a lot of them didn't think that the movement was going to outlive them. They kind of thought this was something they were going to do, and probably when they all got old and died, it probably would just have had its time and faded away. The fact that they go to pagan pride and pagan events and see generations after them just as interested, just as on fire, just as ready to make a difference, they said it's heartened them. It's made them feel really good that, you know, this is going to continue past them. And I've gotten so many nice, you know, thank you emails and questions about more help that they can provide because they realize that, you know, this wasn't just for them. You know, they're seeing the actual evidence that this is a culture they've helped create. And seeing that, those smiles and that satisfaction and that sense of knowing that they've contributed something really significant has been really heartening too as well. So it's exciting, and it's busy, 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 busy too. So, but I'm happy as a pig in slop doing it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm back in the field, you know, collecting stories. And it's just, it feels really good to be doing anthropological work again. So yay!
You know, that's just from what participation I've had personally with camp recently. It really is amazing that folks are, you know, practitioners and elders from, you know, the corners of the United States and beyond are starting to actually realize, hey, camp exists, camp is here, you know, and really providing additional resources and insights and information to gather. It's one of those things. It really feels like it's going to bring such a wonderful asset to the community. And once the archive is fully up and published and accessible from the general public, you know, having that asset, having that those vetted resources and such it's going to be an unbelievable asset to all of us in the metaphysical community. I just watch in awe at this point at it growing, and you know, you can see that pulse quickening. So for those of you that haven't followed the page, for those of you who haven't jumped in, you know, especially if you're out there listening and you have stories to tell, this is where you want to be.
Absolutely. And yeah, and we always tell folks that we happen to be, we started this whole thing in Minnesota, in Afghanistan. That's kind of where it started. But we have a national scope. So when you go to our website, if you think, if you're sitting in another state and you think, yeah, I'd like to start collecting histories, I'd like to get this thing started, reach out to us because we can assist you with the steps of looking into what grants your historical society in your state gives. Do you need assistance with a grant proposal? Do you need to train
excellent
interviewers? Do you need to train people to archiving work? Velvet has the beautiful vision of, scanning days where when she gets the tech that she wants, and she's got her eyes on some really cool scanning toys. I mean, she's got some. Oh, it's going to be fun. Where literally you can drop down a document and scan it in like a few seconds and go. She's got her eye on some really great stuff that is grantable. And they're portable. So a lot of it will be traveling around and having people bring their boxes out of their basements and just having at it. And we do know from experience, because she's done a lot of visiting of basements and attics of pagan elders here in the community, is that people have kept stuff for decades, and they have attics and basements and all just full of boxes of documents and papers and newsletters. And yeah, you can see the relief that, oh, good, I don't have to keep this in the basement anymore. It's going to be preserved
right
somewhere. And the younger generations, the digital generations, are excited because now they'll be able to have access to this, right? My good friend Brian, who's a millennial, says, give us a link and we'll click on it. We can't get to the stuff if it's in somebody's basement. We want this stuff. So when this convergence of the material getting digitized and the digital generations getting access, there might be this, oh, my goodness, the world will change. So we get excited about it, too. And there's something also poignant to me, too, as well, that we lost another elder in our community, and I didn't get the chance to interview him in time, another one. Really kind of focusing on the fact that there's a poignancy to this work, too, because you are preserving things because, people don't live forever and things don't last forever. So to be able to know that, we're making sure that people are remembered. And that their legacies are remembered and their work is remembered is, it's sobering, but it's also just, it's what keeps you going,
Right. So much awesome work. So stay tuned. Camp will be continuing to grow, and we're very proud to support that effort here, Reverend James and myself, and Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. So, I can guarantee you, this isn't the last time you'll hear about it. But
all
you know
right
what? I think this is a good time for some messages from our sponsors, and we'll turn it back over to Reverend James.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Now for some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, June 11th on the Crystal Silence League in syndication with John St. Germain will be The Spiritual Church, Leafy Anderson, and Black Hawk. And Tuesday, June 11th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of Rites of Passage, Mother and Father. And Wednesday, June 12th on the Now You Know Show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of The Church and Needles and Pins, P-I-N-S. and Thursday, June 13th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, on the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Voith will be working with angels and archangels. And next Sunday, June 16th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman will be Miss Miranda. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors, and back to you, Reverend Dart.
Thank you, Reverend James. So, jumping into our topic for tonight, rites of passage. You know, when Doc Murphy and I were kind of chatting about a topic for tonight, had no idea how well we would be blending in with the current syndication schedule for The Witch, the Priests, and the Cauldron on Tuesdays. Definitely want to tune in to those shows. I believe last week there was one on Rites of Passage as well as tomorrow's show. You know, a lot of people, in my estimation, in this day and age, discount the importance of rites of passage, culturally, spiritually, emotionally, and in some cases, physically. So I'm really kind of excited to bring this topic this week, and I can't think of a better co-pilot on this ride than you, Doc Murphy. Why don't you kick us off, and we'll see where the conversation takes us.
Yeah, well, happy to. Well, you know, getting an anthropologist to talk about rites of passage is like, you know, getting a chef to talk about their favorite food. I mean, this is something where it seems it's almost a universal human pattern. It almost seems like, really, if you look at any culture in the world, there are, sometimes they're small, sometimes they're large, sometimes they're community-wide, sometimes they're clan-based, sometimes they're private. But there's always seems to be a collection of rituals that occur that demark leaving behind one way of life, changing, and moving on to a new way of life. The anthropologist Victor Turner was the one who really coined the notion of rites of passage, kind of this theoretical notion, the pattern of the rite of passage, where it seems to be that, and really there hasn't been a heck of a lot of people that have been able to prove it one way or another. Attempts have been made to try to see if rites of passage take any other pattern, and they haven't been terribly successful. This one seems to have nailed it, where with a rite of passage, you have a period of who you are prior. You have a second part, which is considered a liminal place. You're neither this nor that. And then when it's over with, you are something different or new or older or stronger. Because of the rite of passage that you've had, because of the experience that you've had, you can't go back to who you were before. I was having a conversation in a different part of my life a few years ago with the illustrious Velvet Capone, my research partner, and we were sitting at Fire Circle kind of having a conversation about roles in the community, you know, teaching, elderhood, this sort of thing, and how you know when it's time. And those of you that recall the interview I had on the show with her, she's a woman wise beyond her years in a lot of ways. And I remember chatting with her about, because I'm not an initiate in any traditions, but initiation is a real important rite of passage to a lot of people. We can get into that a little bit more deeply if you'd like. And I had always said, it's not like I haven't had the opportunity in Paganistan to get initiated, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I'm in Paganistan. you know.
Right.
But the hesitation has not been nervousness. The hesitation has always been, first off, I've got the anthropological training. I know a lot of stuff can be peeled down to its arbitrary roots if I really wanted to. But also I kept kind of coming back to, well, what would be the reason? I don't want to just get initiated because it's just what you do. What does it mean? If I was going to go through that ritual, I don't want anything to be empty or meaningless that I do ever again in my life. And the typical questions didn't satisfy me. Oh, it's you got to have closer relationship with spirits and beings and deities. No, you don't need an initiation to do that. I've evidence of that. It's because you want to become a minister or a priest. Nope, not. I'm not the least bit interested in that. I'm a scholar. That's what I do. My role in the community is different. So I'm talking to her about this, and she said, "What since your first moon, when you were a young girl, and now, have you had any major kind of life-changing event?" I thought about it for a minute, and she said, "You know, you're not married. You don't have children. This is all happily my choice, by the way." And she said, the typical things that would mark a rite of passage in cultures for a woman you haven't had. Now, she said, no, I'm not saying go out and do any of this stuff just to have it. She's saying, but what you kind of need, which might help you punch through some of the magical blockages that maybe you are having, or personal blockages, you need that metaphysical line in the sand that you can walk over and know that once you walk over, you can't go back. And when she put it that way, that was like, now that's a way to think about a rite of passage that makes a lot of sort of soul sense, personal sense to me, to know that the change that's about to occur when you step over that metaphysical line in the sand is about you leaving behind something in who you are or who you were that you don't need anymore and embracing the new part of your life. Or a new part of your new role in society, that new part of yourself that you embrace fully. And the reason for that ritual, for that rite of passage, is to spend time in that liminal space where you're neither one or the other, the pressure cooker where the change happens. And then when you step out of it, you are transformed. It's a lot of the same patterns of the alchemical process of, you know, birth, life, and death. The fire circle that I participate in is a rite of passage for a lot of people because it's three nights of intensity and work. They can be simple family-based rituals. But it's definitely, Turner really nailed it when he saw this kind of three-part ritual that you have. And you are something before. You are neither this nor that in the middle, in the liminal spot. And then at the end, you are changed. In a lot of cultures, it has to do with changing your physicality because your physical body is changing. Women are getting their first moon. Men are getting their first, you know, their first wet dreams. Their bodies are telling them things are starting to change. So they push it forward with a ritual that also puts them in a mental and a spiritual state that, like, you're not a child anymore. You couldn't go back to being a child if you tried. So there's a lot of rituals that look violent to Western eyes, but the way that the kind of administering of sort of painful liminal spaces and painful practices with some of these rituals is to basically let the children know who are changing into adults that life's going to get painful. Childbirth hurts. Then, you know, all sorts of other things hurt. These are going to be things that you have to be accustomed to. Be prepared for. Your bodies are no longer the bodies of children. Your minds are no longer the minds of children. But with that ordeal also comes you returning and becoming reintegrated into society, and now you are looked at and treated and given different responsibilities and privileges as an adult at that point. In other cultures, the young people run to the adults and say, I'm ready for my rite of passage. And that's the adults that go, no, you're not. You're not old enough yet. You're going to wait because they see what the change is going to bring them. Well, you know, likewise, some of it is just, well, this is what your body is telling you is going to happen. We got to move this along because these are what are your social expectations are. This is how your physicality is changing. And this is the spiritual responsibilities that you have. So that's just sort of the very big umbrella talk of what a rite of passage is. And again, the ones that I'm kind of referring to happen to be moving from childhood to adulthood, which in a lot of cultures is a very dramatic set of rituals depending on where it is in the world. But rites of passage can also be markers of just change in social status, change in age. Birthdays are rites of passage. Certain birthdays in our culture are specific rites of passage. Deciding to be married, to have children, to in other ways change who you are, who you were to who you are, with that stuff in the middle where you're not sure one way or the other. Those are all rites of passage too. So thinking in terms of rites of passage is that really remarkable three-part process. With the magic of liminality, you know, the hanged man and the tarot card. And then really looking back after you've stepped over the line and going, well, that's who I was, but I'm not that anymore, and fully in that transformation.
You know, it really is fascinating when you think of the importance of these moments in time, you know, from a cultural standpoint, from a spiritual standpoint, from a personal standpoint. You know, it really does call that transformation pretty much, you know, front and center, and changes the energy, changes the direction, changes the path that you are on at that time. You have Hollywood's sort of, I mean, I guess in some cases it's very hyperbolic with some of the images and imagery that they provide in television and movies about rites of passage, where, you know, a lot of people can look at these and just think, well, damn, everything is just violent. If a rite of passage, it must be some violent change. People are going to beat me with sticks or burn me with fire or something. And it really does kind of disproportionately, I think, hinder the actual beauty that these moments can contain and do contain for those that experience them, whether, you know, it is a tradition or, mm-hmm. you mentioned the milestone birthdays and things like that, if you're talking about a preservation of a tradition, some of those things, some cultures you just can't avoid. But especially those one, the rites of passage that you have the opportunity to personally choose, that mm-hmm. supports the formation of your identity or gives you a sense of accomplishment, kickstarts your personal growth, gives you an emotional release. These transformational moments are just sublimely beautiful and so powerful, so very powerful.
Indeed. And necessary. I mean, like I said, they don't always have to be kind of big, dramatic, with a kind of dramatic physicality. Sometimes they're subtle. The rites of passage can be quiet. They can be personal. They can be, you know, clan-based or family-based, really small, and maybe the actions are subtle. But they're also necessary. There's been some talk. There was some talk in a lot of anthro classes that I had, and it was ripe for discussion about whether or not the society that we're sitting in right now, this sort of industrialized Western culture, you know, colonial, post-colonial situation, is really... it has really lost its significant rites of passage. Some people look
blurred.
At how, what, well, you know, some people look at some and they'll point and say, look at your man or man children, you know, you have Miatanized adults acting like children, but children who are, you know, sexualized and look like they're adults. There's a whole lot of confusion here about where you're kind of supposed to be in the passage of life. And we have people who are getting older, becoming elders, but they're running to the plastic surgeon so they can try to look like they're 22. There's just a lot of, like, messed up stuff. Part of it's marketing, which is a good part of our culture. But there's some folks that have said, you know, if there was more focus, as there were in the past, about these milestones in your life, and not just milestones, but celebrations, rituals, ordeals that you have to go through in order to come out the other end completely different. I mean, one that's popping into my head, for example, that is a successful one, but not everybody does it, would be something like joining the military and going through boot camp, right?
Right.
That's an ordeal. I have lots of friends who have been in the military. That's where you are either made or break. And then they said, after, if you can get through boot camp, then there's more kind of direction on what your role is and what your specialized training is or where you're going to be sent in the world. And but that's also where if you're out of shape, if you have no direction once you've been through boot camp, you are sharpened like a knife, you know. But that's an example of, you know, once you get through that ordeal, you are somebody different than you were before you got in. But not everybody engages in a boot camp like that. We have a very small percentage of our population these days that gets involved in the military. And when they do, these days, instead of being drafted, they're it's a choice. But in the kind of general society, some people wonder if we still have them. Well, we do. We just are too busy letting kind of popular media and kind of the mess that's around us kind of dictate to us what's important about it. I think when people really sit and look at themselves and look at their families and look at their situations in life, they can kind of point out in their lives where I thought I knew who I was, and then I went to this period where I just didn't know anything, and I felt really nervous, and I felt my feet come out from underneath me, and what's happening to me? And then they get through it, and they go, man, that was rough, but you know what? It's one of the best things that ever happened to me, you know? I had to leave my family. My family was a real toxic situation, and it got to the point where in my 20s, I finally just had to just pack up and leave. And I still have not spoken to many members of my family. I blessedly have a new relationship with my sister that I'm, you know, grateful for, but it was just too dangerous to be in that situation anymore. Too toxic. And it was incredibly difficult at the time, and I didn't know who I was, and I didn't know what was going to happen after that. I had great supportive friends and a partner at the time, but I literally floated in another dimension trying to figure out where I was going to land. And now I look back on that, which was, you know, almost 3 years ago, and I can say, man, hard as it was, that had to happen. And I am who I am because I had to go through that. So, again, thinking in terms of what is it that happens to you that causes you to look back and go, I couldn't go back there again if I tried. And in a lot of cases, I don't want to go back there because that's not who I am anymore. If you think you've been through a period of your life or an ordeal or a pleasant or just a time where now you look at that and go, man, that was hard. But clearly that's what made me who I am today, and I'm glad for it. That's when you know you've hit a rite of passage, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be culturally scripted. It doesn't have to be traditional. It doesn't have to be. It can be that level of personal, for sure.
And I do think in many cases people discount the true importance of making these decisions. You know, when you think of like the example that you shared with us from your own personal life, you know, that's almost the mourning and that goes with that, and the sloughing off of that negativity. The transformation is palpable. You know, it's huge, and I think a lot of the strength of the individual that has gone through that sort of a situation and similar in many cases anymore is downplayed, is mm-hmm. minimized, and where to almost to the point of where people just they just don't care. You know, they're like, mm-hmm. eh, this is okay. My family are jerks. Eh. Or, you know, I'm in this abusive relationship with my husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. Eh. You know, being able to cast these things off and transform in these situations are very powerful. As well as, you know, the smaller, or quote unquote smaller, I should say, events, you know, where things of, you know, when you think of things like in adolescence in different cultures, you know, folks that go on, especially in Native American cultures, you know, they'll go on vision quests and the transformation yeah. there. Say, you know, these are huge levels of, you know, it's kind of like power-ups or some, mm-hmm. you know, trying to put it in some sort of a modernistic term, you know, it's like leveling up or something of that nature. You know, even, you know, when you talk of the bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs,
yes.
bat mitzvahs,
mm-hmm.
quinceañeras in Latin America, the Lakota Sundance, you know, all of these ceremonies, all of these events, these rites of passage literally slough off what is no longer along your path. And, you know, mm-hmm. kind of bringing this into a little bit of a folk magic-y sort of an area, you know, I've seen where for those who have difficulty in actively pursuing rites of passage and accepting them and growing with them, I don't know if I want to say in a natural sort of way, you know, we start to see a lot of call outs for road opening work and blockbuster work. And because you start to feel stuck.
Yeah.
But you're not allowing yourself to experience these things as they're being presented to you, as they're coming to you. And eventually you do, you kind of get from a spiritual side, you kind of do get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it will create almost a dam of holding back additional and future opportunities, additional future growth, additional future abundance, prosperity, whatever adjectives you want to throw in here.
Right. Exactly. You know, in the pagan community here and elsewhere, the process of an initiation is a rite of passage that a lot of folks in many ways go through a number of times. And we have a few in the community that are multi-initiates and multi-traditions. I have a friend that we joke and we say, you're an initiation junkie. You just join groups just to get initiated over and over again. But when people are walking into an initiation with the reasons why they're doing it clearly, with their commitment intact, with, you know, ready for that change, it's a process where, like I said, you kind of leave behind who you were. Sometimes it's symbolic in that there's things that you, you know, paper with wishes that you burn, or there are, you're walking on a land that is unfamiliar to you, and then, you know, you're led down the garden path with some folks and some traditions. It means you leave behind your necklaces and your clothing and your, to symbolize that you are dying to who you were. You're hitting this liminal space in the middle, and then you will be reborn at the end, somebody new. And with that initiation and all this stuff, it looks different from tradition to tradition. But you do kind of, basically, for lack of a better term, show up to the spirits, to the gods, to whomever it is that you're committing to, naked, you know, completely stripped down of who you were before. You are told who you newly are, what your you know, next steps are going to be, what your degree is, and you either select a new name or are given a new name. And there's this whole notion of when a rite of passage happens, selecting another name, because that name reflects more truly who you are. And then you come back out and you're reborn with your new name and with your new role as clergy or degreed person or, you know, whatever your tradition calls you to be. We have a lot of folks running around the pagan community, many who, some people go by their everyday names, their legal names. Some go by pagan nicknames. Doc Murphy is mine. We've got folks in the community named Mom Hen and Cosmic Popeye, and I mean, we got goofy nicknames for our community. But then within, they have their magical names, which is really nobody's business but theirs, and only really spoken if they speak it at all in the context of ritual. And it's that name that is holds a lot of power with regard to remembering who they were before and who they are now. Yeah, they may go back to work after their initiation on Saturday and still be, you know, Bob. But when in circle, they speak their name as, you know, Phoenix or Hawk or Hermes or whatever name, Perduarvo, whatever name they decide to choose that's magical, that reconnects them with who they really have become. And it's so powerful. I went at the last couple of fire circles. I was punching through a lot of stuff, much of which I've been in discussion with you about. With that came, you know, my fire circle sisters running me through a 3-night rite of passage at fire circle. They rang me inside out and came out of it, had a dream about my great-grandmother, who I never met, but who literally stepped out of a photograph and said, "You got a new name now." And it came. So I do have a magical name as well. And I don't run around telling everybody what it is, but when I'm in ritual, that's when it comes out. When I'm at fire circle, that's when I let people know. And I know who that individual is, that, you know, entity is. That's not my legal name, and it's not Doc Murphy, right? It's a whole other level. So the changing of names, sometimes the changing of bodies, the changing of appearance. I know a lot of folks, when they go through rites of passage, they get tattoos or they get body modifications. Years and years and years ago, I was a hairdresser. A big rite of passage, cutting your hair or letting it grow. All sorts of things that where you can kind of express in your appearance and in your physicality your change in addition to the internal change. Some people like it, some people don't, but again, it's the same thing. How can I look in the mirror in the morning and do I want to see the same person that I was before? Nope, not really. Time for a new look, time for a haircut. But I used to do hair. You could always tell when a woman came in and she was kind of newly in a relationship or things were going really well, she tended to want to keep her hair long, tended to want to grow it out. The women who were ready to start a new job, broke up with a boyfriend, finished a divorce, they wanted to cut off. They wanted to start fresh. And that's, you know, that's a pretty easy marker of change is your physicality. But rites of passage also work to transform you on the inside as well, where sometimes you don't realize someone's changed until they start to talk and you go, wow, I never would have thought that about you. Or, wow, you've really changed. Yeah, they really have. They feel it at that level.
Whereas, you know, I do want to say something about the concept of receiving a new name or choosing a new name.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen discussions in various pagan social media groups where, you know, there are those that are trying to really express just how intensely important it was for them to either during an initiation or some form of a rite of passage, receive a new name or be able to choose their own name. And others in the group that, you know, there's always that one that's like, whatever, you just change your name. You're still the same person you were the other day. No, there is a level, and I will attest to this. There is a level of just immense, just energy, universal blessing, what have you, whatever you want to call it, that comes when those moments come through. I've personally had a few different moments such as this, you know, when I first started walking a Buddhist path and taking refuge. Rinpoche bequeathed me my new name, which, you know, is used in those circles. When I was ordained, I'm ordained in the Order of Melchizedek, which is, it's a service organization, because for myself, you know, living to make the world a better place and improving the lives of others is it's my passion. So service ordination made sense. And just the ordination ritual itself, which, yeah, you can get ordained online. You know, you send in $50 and you're all of a sudden ordained in the Church of the Magical Spaghetti Monster or some such shit like that. I've seen it said a few times on Facebook. But, you know, I was actually, for myself, sitting in this group of individuals, and we're all there and pledging to actively make the world a better place. It fit in very well with, you know, the Buddhist refuge ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, the organization that I'm ordained through, had kind of an additional educational opportunity called the School for the Prophets, where we would get together, and it was pretty much a 2-week intensive of, you know, learning and fellowship and everything. And we had one ceremony at the end of which we were bequeathed a magical name, which, again, like yours, it is used only, I only share that in those instances where it is appropriate. But all I can say is, damn, you want to talk about leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the experience that it literally changed the direction of my life. And I can't speak to it enough. So, you know, I've had the ability to, and the opportunity to experience some of these things that we're talking about tonight. And, you know, something so profound for each individual from their own perspective is paramount to living this life, I feel. Just wanted to share that.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm getting goosebumps with you talking about that. Oh, my goodness. well, my most recent kind of rite of passage, I allude to it with a couple of blog entries. I'm going to drop the name in the chat of the role that I have now, because we had to make the word up, and we called ourselves Majas. A while back, maybe about a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, one of our members of Firehaven popped on and just started having a conversation. She had had a women's group, and she popped on the chat and had recently gone through a hysterectomy. She felt some need to acknowledge this change in her body, that also she wanted to ascribe meaning to it that wasn't, first off, is either being ignored or was being turned by something weird by the medical industry or the marketplace. And she was like, I don't want with her hand in me. I think we can do something about this. Well, the habit in a lot of pagan traditions is to kind of fall into that three-part roles for women, if they identify that way, maiden, mother, and crone. All of those kind of basically delineating, well, what makes you who you are as a woman is where you are in the birth cycle, right? You're maiden, you're just getting started, you're a mother, you've had children, you're a crone, you know, it's all done, and now you're an elder woman. And she was like, that's not working. But there's something in between it. We're not all crones yet. A lot of us are still quite young, and a lot of us are still raising our kids. We're still mothers. But there's a lot of us that were of the age of menopause, some of whom are going through natural menopause, some of whom had surgical procedures or medical emergencies where they were thrust into a menopause and they didn't have any agency over it. We all kind of felt this shift in ourselves that we're like, you know, this suggestion she's making is a good one. We should have a spiritual curriculum, and then we should go through rite of passage together that acknowledges not necessarily the end of our motherhood, not necessarily cronehood. And I was one of the people that spoke up and said, I ain't nowhere close to being a crone. I got stuff to do, you know. Something in the middle that says we are acknowledging and ascribing beautiful meaning to this change in our bodies that is also changing us. But we are not maidens. We are not. Some of us are mothers. Some of us are not. We're certainly not crones yet. If anything, it was the crones that worked us through our rites of passage, the proper crones, ones in their 70s. So we decided, yeah, okay, let's do this. And there were six of us that went through the curriculum. The curriculum was designed by Lizzie, who was the one who came up with the idea. And we met once a month to do shadow work, journaling, you know, conversations about tangling with the demons of our past. Basically, this was the work of really cleaning out our spiritual closets in order to really leave behind who we were, to embrace who we were becoming in the time of our changing bodies. And let me tell you, her curriculum was outstanding. I've told her several times she needs to publish it. It is superb. It is some of the hardest work I've ever done. We all were looking at each other going, this is hard. I mean, it was an ordeal. I mean, I think I was on the phone with you during some of them. When I was calling my friends with other ones, we're like, you're doing these exercises and you are crying, just on your knees, snot on the floor, crying because of the stuff that's coming up. And then watching as the progression of the curriculum goes, that it doesn't have a hold on you anymore. While watching our physicality, there were some things that we all hit a holy shit a couple of times in the course of the curriculum, but then we were all there for each other. And then when it was all done, the proper crones, the ones who were in their 70s, ran us through a rite of passage, a ritual. And the Maijas were all of us, the six of us. Find pictures of me in particular going through it, but, you know, you can go to the Hay River Firehaven website soon and see all of the women in their purple gowns. We donned purple gowns. We put flowers in our hair. We walked down to the river, and we filled a cup with red wine, and we spoke of what we were releasing, and we spoke of what was going to continue to fill our cups, and we walked to the river, and we dumped the red wine into the river and let it all go. And we sang together, and we feasted together, and what a bond. But right about that point where I was like, I'm feeling changed, I'm feeling good, there was a lot that was moving in my life, that was stuck in my life, that literally started to loosen up. And I almost stunningly, a lot of signs, lots of signals. It was like, and now things are going to, now this is the metaphysical line in the sand you've been waiting for. And I'm so proud of this new role of being a Maija, to the point where I'm going to get it tattooed on my arm on my birthday at the end of the month, you know, a little bit after that. But we kind of had to design what this role was, because if we leaned on tradition to tell us who we were, we wouldn't have had this role created. You know, we would have to shoehorn ourselves into maiden or crone at some point. And I always fought that as someone who chose not to have children and who wasn't old enough to be a crone yet, you know. A lot of us felt that way. What are we going to do next? And we all were cooking up a brew as part of the ritual. And we all have things we want to do. You know, we want to get involved in our art. We want to get just new businesses started. We want to, you know, do all sorts of creative things. We want to do the things that make us happy. And there are, you know, finish raising the kids and then do their own thing. And realizing that this role that we've created is, well, it's not something new, but something new in our community. We aren't trying to thrust ourselves into the maiden, mother, crone paradigm. And it really worked. You know, we all really have look at each other when we're together, and there's this sort of smile, and there's this contentedness that we have. There's this, instead of being firebrands like we were when we were young, we're kind of simmering embers, you know, they keep everyone warm, and really do feel And now, Act 2 or Act 3, depending on where we are in our lives, we're moving forward. And, you know, I got to say it, we look pretty amazing in our purple gowns. So,
I did enjoy the photos.
If folks want to go to my blog, you know, rootdocmurphy.com, the latest entry is about the major ritual. It's much that can't be spoken only because, and it's pictures of us in our purple gowns doing ritual at Firehaven. I'm looking in the chat. Troll is asking, where did the term Maisha come from? We made the word up. Literally, we made the word up. We tried on some other words that kind of mixed together, you know, things like mothers and queens and you know, funnily, and none of them really work. And so Lizzie, the person who designed the curriculum, and a couple other people came up with first the word Maya. We had a student that was involved, one of the women that was involved. Her name was Maya, so we're like, well, we can't do that. And so she just kind of created this word, and we just said, okay, it's our word now, Maisha. We can't seem to find it in any language, so when you don't have it, you make it up. And we're hoping it catches on. You know, we now know that since we were the pilot group, basically, that other women's groups that are going through this rite of passage that want to, there's all of us can teach it now. And that's another thing that's pretty wonderful, too, is, you know, eventually at the other end will be the crones pulling other mages through that rite of passage. And, you know, oh, my goodness. Joel says, my half-sister-in-law named her dog Maisha. Well, we got some digging to do. But anyway, yeah, I'm not sure where Lizzie came up with the word or how she put it together, but it's stuck. It's who we are. It's a rather like a magical name. It's a magical role.
Now, just doing a little bit of brief digging into etymology of bits, you know, just breaking it down into M-A-E and J-A. M-A-E, May. It can be traced back to the Roman goddess Maya, or Maya, if you'd like, which is the Roman goddess of growth and motherhood. And just looking at Ja, you know, in a lot of different languages, it's actually, you know, it's an affirmative term. It can be literally, you know, yes in some languages, but you know, it to me, putting the two together really does kind of empower. I mean, May, my first thought was like maestro. You know, so it does connote that a level of mastery, a level of knowledge, a level of wisdom. I'm really liking the word, to be honest with you. Just my two cents on that. I'm obviously not a part of the process, but very, very intrigued and very, very appreciative of it. And this actually brings up a point that I was hoping we'd actually find a place to fit it in tonight, where, you know, some folks will search and search and search to find a rite of passage that applies to them, or that they feel is inclusive of something that they are missing in their life or wanting to experience in the progression of their life. But this is a very strong example and a very clear indication of the effectiveness of being able to develop your own rite of passage. To, you know, to connote that transformation, to support that growth and really to put that out there. And, you know, some people feel lost because they'll, you know, I did this initiation and it didn't do anything for me. I did this ritual, and I got initiated into this service, and that didn't really fulfill me. And they just kind of wander in just obscurity, wondering, where the hell do I fit in? Which I really think that the you sharing that with everyone really does bring, you know, the beauty of developing a rite of passage and the legitimacy of developing a rite of passage right to the forefront.
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, rituals that are cultural and that are spiritual, yeah, many of them come out of traditions that are maintained, but a great many of them are also innovative and are created. And if there isn't one that exists in your time and place and culture, there's nothing saying you can't create a ritual on your own. I'm thinking in particular of for my friends that are in the Rainbow community or my friends, the acronym of the LGBTQI, in the Earth House community, they've changed the pronunciation. They say, we're in community legitimacois. Folks that are in the Rainbow community talk about their coming out process,
right?
And which often comes with change of name, change of status, change of everything. And was there such a thing as a coming out process prior to that cultural contribution that community made? Well, I don't know. Does it fall in the pattern of a rite of passage? Hell yeah, for sure. Sometimes many, many layers. Sometimes rites of passage are a one and done, and sometimes rites of passage are layered, right? Some of us go through many rites of passage in our life, and some people have that one big one that changes everything. That too. Some are unexpected. When I was teaching, when I was TAing an intro cultural anthropology class back when I was in grad school, one of the assignments, and they had these little, I had the students do these little paper assignments that are about 3 or 4 pages long every few weeks. And we, after they read about a rite of passage, we said, okay, write about a rite of passage from your culture, from your life, from your, you know. And a lot of them talked about their quinceanera or their, you know, when they turned 21 and they went out and got drunk, or they, but, you know, all that sort of thing. But there was a remarkable story that this student shared. When she was a teenager, her parents had divorced. Feelings were still sore. It was still a situation where her father was still bad-mouthing her ma. And she just kind of, at first was the peacemaker, and just kind of rolled with it and ignored him. But there came one day when she was about 16 when dad said one more thing about her mother and something came over her and she had it and she hauled off and cold-cocked her father right across the face. And he was stunned and he looked at her and she looked at him. And she said, that's my mother, no more. And literally it took a punch in the head for him to realize that he'd been putting his daughter through his bitter feelings, and it stopped. Yeah, he probably still had whatever feelings that he had to deal with, but he stopped bad-mouthing his daughter's mother in front of her. He realized he was hurting her, and she said it changed our relationship completely. That's a rite of passage. I remember I dropped the paper when I read it, and I'm like, that's absolutely what that is. Now, she didn't plan for it to happen. Sometimes they just erupt, and you embrace it as it's happening. Sometimes it can feel scary when it happens that way, but then, again, same thing. Like when I had to leave my family, you just have to do it. And you come out the other side and go, I certainly didn't expect that to happen, but whew, glad it did, you know?
And in no way, shape, or form do these spontaneous rites of passage, are they diminished in any way versus, you know, the, I don't know if you want to say traditional ceremonies and rituals of the various cultures and communities around the world. You know, it's really hard to, I think, nail down a specific, I don't want to say definition, but a specific paradigm that will please everyone about what what denotes a rite of passage. But kind of like, you know, that student punching my father in the face, you know, if you are changed at the end of whatever happened, you have just experienced a rite of passage in whatever form it needed to be. I'm a firm believer that a lot of these more spontaneous sorts of rites of passage are, at least in my worldview, in my concept of the universe, you know, these moments are intentionally put in front of you, that it's like, you're not getting it. You haven't listened to, you know, you might have been getting readings and you might have been, you know, doing divination for yourself and, you know, listening to this, that, and the other person, but you're just not getting something that you need in your life to kind of push yourself forward. So eventually the universe just says, all right, dummy, here we go. And bam, the moment hits. Apparently in some cases, literally, but, and from that moment, you sit there, you're bewildered, but you're never the same after.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, folks who have been through illnesses that came out of nowhere, or accidents, or, sort of unexpected tragic situations where the event happens, it does its damage, you're shocked and in recovery for a while, but then you come out of it and you're not the same. And oftentimes there's a choice that folks make about, well, what do I do with this new status now? I have a close friend, one of the Majas, who survived horrifying accident that changed her body forever when she was 18. She's in her 40s now. And she had a choice she had to make. You know, she had been a dancer before, and she couldn't dance anymore. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to bemoan who you were, or are you going to look at this as, well, I'm apparently supposed to be doing something else, and I need to also, you know, be aware of how my body has changed and to take care of it and to live with that, but also not let it define you? I mean, it was a reckoning that she learned to embrace. That is hard. but you're right. If you're not in that, if you've changed at the end of it and you haven't been through that middle part where you just don't know where to go or what to do, it's just going through the motions of a rite of passage. But when it actually does shake you to the point of transformation, then that's when you know you've nailed it, whether it was intentional or not.
You know, and I do want to address the comment. Tiega V asks in the chat about, you know, about rites of passage possibly being transient, like going into a trance and coming out. You know, I can definitely...
Dom, Chris, sorry.
...speak to a little bit of this.
That's the person's name, Dom Christ.
With that, an experience that I had where I was actually put into a deep trance doing a past life regression. It was almost the messaging that came about and the information that was... that was shared with me during the course of that past life regression, which I actively sought out. It was something that, you know, I scheduled, I sat down for, I was ready to go. When I came out of that trance, the world was different. Does that qualify as a rite of passage? Yes. If you sit seance and you go into trance, you know, when you come out of trance, if you are changed, is that a rite of passage? I would say yes.
Absolutely.
And not everybody has these opportunities, really, but I mean, you know, but the point is you can actively seek out these experiences as well, and it doesn't diminish them as a rite of passage.
Exactly. And I've known people who, like I said, with some rites of passage. So for example, I have friends who decided to get married, hand-fasted and married. It was pile on the ceremonies. Let's just do it. They got married in the conventional kind of Western sense because family and because wedding reception
right.
and because presents and because, you know, but knowing pretty well that this was a party, this was a tradition, this was a fellowship, getting your friends together, dancing to a cruddy DJ and that whole thing. So they had that they had that ritual, but then they decided privately after that to go on a trip. And they met up with a priestess friend of theirs who lived in another state. And in the context of her, they did a rite of passage where they acknowledged their changing roles as a couple coming together, you know, in love and in relationship, but also in magic. And there was a level of, well, again, it was another sort of betrothal-style ritual or marriage ritual. That level of, he didn't go into too much detail because it's none of my damn business. So basically, there was a before, there was an ordeal, and there was an after, where the two of them came together and they knew who they were newly as a couple again. And that doesn't mean that, you know, there's rituals and then there's rites of passage. It doesn't mean one's greater; they're different. Rites of passage have that pattern, and rites of passage are meant to transform. Whereas you can happily have a great wedding and have a wonderful ritual with all of your friends, but if what you are seeking is a different facet, I don't want to say a level, I want to say a facet, where you also want to acknowledge that this is changing you or changing yourselves, there are rituals that can do that for you too.
It's just a fascinating discussion. It looks like we have roughly about 4 minutes left in the show.
It goes so fast when we're having fun.
It does. And it's been such an outstanding discussion, really digging into the nitty-gritty of rites of passage and, you know, kind of extolling the opportunities and the need for these in people's lives. Were there any kind of closing ideas or thoughts that you wanted to throw out there to everybody, Doc Murphy?
It's only your perception that makes anything that's going on in your life or anything you choose to do a rite of passage. Just, you know, if you decide it's going to be a time for it to be changing and meaningful, proceed with it and embrace who you are at the other side of it. Draw a metaphysical line in the sand and walk over it, because that's what we're supposed to do as humans. We're supposed to change.
Very true. Very true. And, you know, for those who are seeking these opportunities, seeking these inflection points, these moments of growth in their lives, you know, if there isn't something available or that you're aware of in your local area, you know, one thing I want to throw out there is, you know, take a look at your lineage, at your ancestors, at your what's the word I'm looking for? you know, dive back into your DNA and check out and see, you know, are there options and opportunities from, you know, these bits and pieces that make up who you are now? You know, are you part, you know, Native American? Are there Native American rituals? Are you Cherokee? Are you Lakota? Are you, you know, Sioux? Are there rites and rituals that, you know, are practiced in those communities that you can find and become a part of? You know, are you from, like, I don't know, the African continent? Are there rites and rituals from those communities that you can adapt and bring meaning to your life? You're not confined by your region. You're not confined by, you know, what others around you are doing. Find something that speaks to you. Find something that unlocks that feeling of leveling up.
You're here.
And I think that is my closing remarks. You know, we really could go on very deeply in really discussing rites of passage around the world, you know, from an archaeological and anthropological standpoint, you know, from Europe to Asia to South America to Africa, Australia,
mm-hmm.
you know.
All over the world.
All over the world. There are so many different, very well researched and illuminated rites of passage that are out there. And I think we're best leaving that discussion for another episode.
Oh, wow. Another episode on rites of passage. I'm excited already.
Excellent. Well, oh, we are down to about roughly 12 seconds left for tonight. It flew by on us again, Doc Murphy.
Oh, well, we do that. Let's do it again soon.
It'll happen. Well, you know, that's about all the time that we have for tonight. I really hope everyone's enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, let's keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com in the Twin Cities of Afghanistan, for joining us this week. We invite you to join us next week, and we'll be welcoming another fine guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, and on readersandrootworkers.org, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystic Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here, and be sure to follow at Mystic Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystic Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Reverend James, and thank you yet again to Doc Murphy for joining us tonight. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, my dear, and you are welcome back at any time. You know, folks, almost the end of the quarter. Got a few weeks left coming up. Stay tuned. Reading Palooza is going to be coming your way very, very soon. We'll get that announced out on the Facebook page and the Instagram page. Get your questions ready. You never know who the lineup of readers is going to be. Everybody, I already see the excitement building in the chat. But from all of us here at Mystics, much love, many blessings, and have a wonderful week. Good night.